From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. Jasmine Garz is away on assignment. We sent her on a musical discovery mission, and she'll report back to us with that in the future. So we have a guest DJ segment, which is a deeper dive into the music of performers that we feature here on the show. Today, we go behind the mixing board for an in-depth conversation with the producer. Adrian Quesada is the mastermind behind at least four different bands, Grupo Fantasma, Brownout, Ocote Soul Sounds, and the Ecocentrics. And he joins us from Radio Milwaukee, where he's on the road with the band Spanish Gold. Adrian, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Felix.
All right, so we're going to keep listening to the title track of the album by Ocote Soul Sounds. It's called Coconut Rock. Again, that's the title track, Coconut Rock, from the album by Ocote Soul Sounds. Adrian, you know, I kept seeing your name all over the place on all these different albums, and I kept wondering, like, who is this guy? Like, where did he come from? And why is he making such way cool music in so many different forms, so many different styles? So let's talk a little bit about your background, where you're from, where you're living right now, and the kind of music you heard when you were growing up. So let's start with where you're from.
I'm from Laredo, Texas, which is on the border of Texas and Mexico in South Texas. I was born there and raised there, lived there 18 years. I moved to Austin, Texas, like 3 days after I finished high school. I mean, Laredo, I love it, and I love the fact that, you know, what it like provided for me growing up, and the idea of growing up between two cultures and all that. I love Laredo, but man, for somebody who wanted to be in the arts and music, I was ready to get the heck out of there. 3 days, my bags were packed. My parents were laughing about that. But before I even finished high school, my bags were packed and ready to go to, 4 hours away. Here's the live music capital of the world, Austin, Texas. So I love Laredo, but, Austin was where I needed to be for what I wanted to do with my life. So I moved there when I was 18, and I've been there since.
Yeah, well, let's go back a little bit. You said your bags were packed because you knew exactly what you wanted to do. You wanted to be in the arts somehow. Why was that? Or did you grow up in a musical family, an artistic family? What was it that planted that seed?
You know, my parents were into music and stuff like that, but I wouldn't say that, I have friends that were, when they say they were in a musical family, they would literally sit around and sing songs with their parents on guitars and stuff like that. That was not the case at my house. my parents would listen to music and had a record collection and whatnot. And I was an only child, and my parents worked a lot when I was young, so I was home a lot by myself and just kind of had to entertain myself. I used to draw all the time. I moved to Austin. I went to UT and got an art degree, actually, was what I did. But I knew I kind of wanted to do music, and I just grew up. It was just a way to entertain myself and listen to music all the time, you know, watch the first day that MTV launched, and that just opened up a whole world. Like, you know, I also have friends from bigger cities that, you know, had access to really cool underground music through their friends and would go to concerts when they were 13 and were reading zines and stuff like that. Laredo is pretty isolated, and we didn't have access to that. So I think the only way that I discovered a bunch of music at my age was really through MTV early on.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about music and the border. You're hearing a certain type of music and probably some music that your parents were listening to. So let's talk about the music that you heard versus the music that you really liked and that influenced you.
Yeah, you know, that was kind of the beginning of the first band that I was a part of in Austin, Grupo Fantasma, when a few of us were from Laredo. So basically, you know, in Laredo, like I said, you grow up between two cultures, but it might be the most Hispanic city in the country. I think that just came out. I think it's 96 or 97%. So everybody speaks Spanish, and that's just how, you know, the first few times I took my wife down there, we would go to like a corner store and I'd say or go through a drive-thru and I'd say, just watch this. I'm going to speak English and they're going to speak Spanish and nobody's going to budge. It's just funny. Like I grew up thinking that was normal, but you know, I could totally drive up to Taco Palenque and be like, yeah, I'll have a, you know, pirata. And they're like, sí, so quieres also, you know, whatever. And it's just, so that's how I grew up. So I had like, I didn't really know a lot of barriers wasn't until I moved to Austin that I realized that other people had kind of barriers like that for them. But you know, obviously the music on the border, you know, the big thing, you know, obviously is like norteño, and heard a lot of cumbia and stuff like that on the radio, and Tejano stuff is huge. And, you know, my grandmother would listen to Los Trio Los Panchos and things like that. But, but you know, I was just like every other, you know, young kid in, you know, for the most part in America, in that I wanted to be in the Beastie Boys and I wanted to be in the Dead Milkmen and stuff like that, you know. So it wasn't until later on that I started to appreciate cumbia and Tejano. And you know, when you're growing up, you know, we're little punk kids, it's just like, that music is lame, right? I mean, I have to say it wasn't, right. I didn't really start to appreciate it until I was probably in high school. I started studying guitar and was playing flamenco, and that's when I kind of started to respect music that wasn't just on MTV. And then, you know, that's kind of what bonded us all together to start Grupo Fantasma, was this appreciation for that music and seeing what we could do with it.
Taco Palenque.
Oh, yeah. I had to give a little shout out there to Taco Palenque.
What we do on our guest DJ segments is we ask people to bring in music that has either influenced you or that you're listening to currently. And when I threw it out to Adrian, he brought in covers. He brought in a selection of cover songs. So why the cover songs this time?
I love the idea of somebody taking a song and either doing something new to it, making it theirs, and sometimes even topping it, because I'm a nerd and think about things like make lists like that. I've been doing that since I was a little kid. I just thought, well, man, I get into these discussions with friends, or I just make playlists myself, but about people that actually sometimes, you know, make the definitive version of another song. And I just love the idea of that. So I thought that'd be kind of fun. I had like five lists. We could do this for 5 hours, but I just settled on that one because it's kind of relevant to.
We'll save the other list for next time, man.
All right.
Okay, so the first track we're going to play sort of leads us into the next question, the influence of Latin rock, the 70s style Latin rock in your music. And one of the tracks you brought in is Evil Ways by Santana.
Baby.
you know, I was thinking of people that have made the definitive version of the song. And, you know, the Santana song was, I mean, Evil Ways was originally recorded by Willie Bobo, but I feel like nobody, you know, not many people know that except for, like, other musicians who dig deep into kind of Afro-Latin music. And, you know, obviously Santana's influence on what I was doing with Grupo Fantasma and what Brownout does and stuff is, you know, obviously we don't even have to mention that. It's super obvious and huge. And I think that, you know, for Santana, was somebody that made a few songs his. Oye Como Va was a Tito Puente song, but, you know, a lot of people don't know that it's Santana. And Evil Ways was, I don't think Willie Bobo wrote it, but he was the first to record it. I love the idea that that's, you know, Santana made it his. And I love the Willie Bobo version, but, I mean, you can't deny that. You know, I think this is probably the most obvious selection, you know, I'm throwing out there.
Okay, here we go from Santana to the Willie Bobo original. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to make this transition almost in mid-beat so you can hear how identical the cover version is to the original. You know, when you hear this, there's very little difference, you know, in the arrangements and in the feeling and the groove.
Yeah, I think the only thing, you know, different, I think, is that there, you start to hear the influence of rock and blues from Santana. You know, this one's groovy, man. I love the Willie Bobo version. Absolutely.
When I come home, baby, my house is dark and my pots are cold. You hanging out.
Okay, let's go back to your story. Now, your days after your 18th birthday, you moved to Austin. So what were your impressions? What were your first impressions of moving there from Laredo?
The first thing I think I remember noticing was that my accent was really heavy. Everybody was like, where are you from? My accent was super heavy. It was really insane. That was the first thing I remember noticing, like, meeting other people. The other thing was just the idea that there was, like, places to go see bands.
During that time when you first got there, did you meet any musicians that eventually influenced you in some way?
Yeah, you know, I actually, you know, to rewind a little bit, I remember one of the people that I remembered making an impression on me in Austin as far as also being like an Austin-based person was David Garza. I don't know if you're familiar with David.
Oh, he's one of my faves. I talk
yeah,
about
well,
him
David,
all the time.
I remembered, like, so I'd just dig through the papers and just look at everything and go see every band. And that was the first time I saw a guy and it was pronounced with the pronunciation, you know, it was just spelled like that. And I was like, man, that's crazy because, you know, here I'm this, like, Mexican-American kid from a, like I said, a city that's like 97%. Mexican, and I was like, I gotta want to go see that guy. And I just remembered, like, oh my god, he looks like people I know. He, you know, his name looks like people I know, and he's an incredible musician. I mean, years later, just in the last couple of years, I've, you know, I was able to produce his last album, and now he's, you know, I'm honored to call him one of my friends, but and collaborators. But yeah, I remember he was one of the first ones that left an impression that there was somebody on stage that looked, you know, not, I wouldn't say exactly like me, but looked like people that I was familiar with. And
right.
and he referenced all that music, even though he was doing rock and roll and pop music. He was playing, you know, guitar the way that I remembered kind of playing, was like kind of classical influence. You could see that. And so yeah, he was another Austin person that kind of made an impression on me early on.
Yeah, it's always important to recognize those kind of influences. And speaking of influences, we want to get back to some of the music you brought in. Why'd you bring this Walk On by Isaac Hayes?
This one is a good example of a song that's just such a classic. And the original is Dionne Warwick. But I when I hear it, I think of the Isaac Hayes version. It just blows my mind. I love soul music. And I just love the idea that they basically took chords, even kind of changed them a little bit. It's slightly different from the original. And made this like epic arrangement of it, where he just sang it completely different and just made it his own. You know, like you said with the Santana one, you can kind of hear more similarities. With this one, it's like they just made a whole new song out of it.
What is it about this song that puts a timestamp on it that you immediately know, or you have a good idea of what era it's from? What do you think?
To me, there's like three giveaways. There's the wah-wah guitar and that fuzzy guitar right there, where like you could tell that's when people were just starting to do that, because they have very liberal use of it.
What year was this released, you know?
I think it was 69.
Wow.
Or was it 71? I can't remember for sure.
Well, from that period, certainly. I would guess 71.
Yeah.
Because of the wah-wah and the fuzz tone seem a little bit more advanced than the stuff you heard coming from Woodstock in 69. But that's just a semi-educated guess on my part.
Well, because I have a iPhone in front of me, it's 69. It is. Yeah.
Trumped by Siri again.
This is the kind of stuff I have to look up. It drives me crazy.
Oh, a very uneducated guess then.
If you see me walking down the street and I start to cry each time we meet, and walk on by, walk on by, make believe. Cause each time I see you, I just can't help myself. I think about how tight we used to be. I break down and cry. Oh, baby, walk on by.
Before we get back to your music, let's hear a little bit of the original of Walk On By from Dionne Warwick, and you get a really good idea of how it was psychedelicized by Isaac Hayes.
If you see me walking down the street and I start to cry each time we meet, walk on by, walk on by, make believe.
All right, let's get back to your music here. What I want to do is I want to play a little bit of music from each one of the groups that you're associated with. We're going to start with Grupo Fantasma, and then I want to ask you, what part of your musical personality does this band reflect? All right?
Okay.
So let's start with Grupo Fantasma. This is a track called Caramelo.
Cuando yo te amaba mi vida, tú no me hacías caso. Yo vivía muy triste pensando, ¿cuándo será ese cuándo? Te burlabas de mi cariño, tú lo despreciabas. Y entre más el tiempo pasaba, yo me...
Before Grupo Fantasma, I was in a band in Austin that was playing kind of like punk rock jazz stuff or something, but that out of that and another band from Laredo, which was called The Blimp. So anyways, we all linked up in Austin and bonded over cumbia, you know, the fact that we would have these parties and house parties and hang out at coffee shops and stuff. We started thinking that was cool again. We were like, you know, screw all this other music. It's this music that was around us all our life when we were growing up and we were running away from it is like the best music there is. It's timeless. There's a reason that kind of music has been around for, you know, almost a century, and it's awesome. We started going back and realizing that it was something that that we all love. So we thought we'd do our own version of it, and Caramelo I had on some compilation on vinyl, and it was just part of our repertoire. We used to just play parties just to make people dance, and this was just a song we loved and recorded. Kind of like one of the blueprints to what we would do later.
And now for an update, you're no longer with Grupo Fantasma.
Yeah, that's right.
And this is something that you put on one of your websites, that it was a mutual split, that everybody's, there's no animosity, it's just...
Oh, no. Yeah, absolutely. I can't get away from them. We're still in brownout together as the same guys.
Okay.
I'm still on all the emails. I'm still on all the texts. I still see them every few days. It's like, wanted to just have time to do other stuff, and it just kind of came out of that. I finally got to a point where, you know, I just couldn't commit to it anymore, and I felt like... It was better for me to just leave while it was still cool.
Speaking of brownout, here's something from brownout. This is called Ando y Dando. And I think it's important to note that brownout and Grupo Fantasma are largely made up of the same members, the same guys in the band. What is this? What part of your personality does this reflect?
We started to kind of dig deeper into funk music and realize that there is a connection between Latin music and funk music, and it's the African roots to the rhythms. And so we started really getting into this like heavy kind of late 60s, early 70s, like Afro-Latin funk stuff. And so, yeah, actually before Grupo Fantasma, we sounded more like brownout. And then we started playing cumbias, and that's when people started going crazy for it. And then a few years later, we thought, let's just revisit it. Why can't we do both? And it made us better musicians, I think. And it keeps it fresh, keeps it from getting stale and boring. But when I hear, you know, Latin music and this music and funk music, I kind of hear the same thing. Probably goes back to the idea that we grew up in a culture where English and Spanish was interchanged all day long. I still talk to my parents in half English, half Spanish. And so I didn't know those kinds of barriers. So I think, you know, funk music, I hear the same African rhythms that you hear in a cumbia or a salsa.
Okay, now, Ocote Soul Sound. This is a track called Tamarindio. Now, this isn't an original version. This is a remix by the Thievery Corporation, and I'm
playing this
because Thievery Corporation is a Washington, D.C. based band, very much an institution here in D.C. They have very big ears, and the people that they bring in on their label or that they have open for them on their tour, or even the people they have in their band, they're very particular in who they associate themselves with. So tell me the story about how you ended up being associated with Thievery Corporation and their record label and some of the guys in the band.
Martin Perna and I, Martin is from a band called Antibalas. They were based in Brooklyn, New York. We kind of had this serendipitous thing, like the way the way the world works. But, you know, while we were doing what we were doing with Grupo Fantasma, Martin was doing kind of a similar thing with Afrobeat and digging deep into that. New York. So anyways, I was a fan of Antibalas, eventually met Martin, and Martin and I made this album with no big plans other than just making something we both liked. And we made 1,000 copies, and we would just sell them at Grupo Fantasma and Antibalas shows. They were on tour and we were on tour. Then I was at the Austin City Limits Festival, maybe 2000, I don't even remember, 2003 or 2002 or something. And my wife was a big Thievery Corporation fan, so I knew who they were. And she would play them all the time, and we dug them. And I was backstage and just sat down and looked. And I happened to have my bag with me, and I had an Ogote CD in there. I just turned around, and one of the guys was right there. Eric Hilton was sitting right next to me. And we just struck up a conversation, and before I left, I just handed him the CD. They were self-pressed, self-distributed CDs, and this was on a Friday afternoon. On Monday, I had an email from him that said, like, he loved it and wanted to release it on their label, and so on and so forth. We've built up a good relationship with them, and we've opened for them on tour. They've done remixes for us, and they released all four of our albums.
The Ogote Soul Sounds.
Yeah.
Right. You got to keep your group straight here, man. For people
yeah,
listening.
Exactly. It confuses me for sure.
Once again, you guys are playing with conviction and in a very impressive way. This stuff sort of reminds me of it's early 70s, mid 70s funk jazz, like Herbie Hancock did for a while, and with some Sun Drop album, stuff like that. Some of that CTI stuff, the jazz label CTI. That's what Ogote Soul Sounds reminds me of. It's that.
Yeah, both Martin and I had, I met another musical partner and lifelong friend that we bonded over a bunch of different music. But I think both of us, the way we arrived at listening to that music was actually through hip hop music, because we weren't raised on this 70s stuff that you're talking about. But we were both into hip hop music that as you get a little older and start to really dig on the music, not just the rap aspect of it, but the beats, you start to kind of dig, and there was this whole culture happening of people wanting to find out, well, what song was in that sample that made the song really good? And from that, we both arrived at this music, and later on, met and became friends, and turned out that we both had similar interests in music. And so, yeah, that's how we both went back and arrived at, it's kind of interesting that it took something like hip-hop to take us back to study music from before it,
Well, I'm not complaining, because you guys and a lot of other bands are doing that. And it just brings it back to the music, again, that I cut my teeth on as I was becoming a serious music listener. So no complaints here, bro. Just kidding.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome.
Okay, finally, the Ecocentrics. And this is a track called Jardim. Jardim. Mm-hmm.
Jardim. It's Chita Lima is the singer on it. She's Brazilian, so I know that she... The lyrics are in Portuguese, so I think it's Jardim.
Thanks, man. Here we go.
I didn't know that until she told me.
Yeah.
tell us about the, is it Echocentrics? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, that's right. Echocentrics started as me writing, it's probably like the closest thing to a solo album that I've done. I started writing all these songs when I was on tour with Grupo Fantasma all the time. Grupo Fantasma was this big, huge band, 10-piece band, really aggressive sounds. And whenever I wasn't on tour, and really when I was in hotel rooms and stuff, I found myself writing these songs that kind of, to me, had like a feminine energy to them. Maybe it was just a reaction, like I just needed a break from 10 dudes bashing on instruments and wanted to write something a little, just feminine was the word that always came to my mind. And obviously I love psychedelic soul music, as you can tell by the Isaac Hayes and all that stuff. So I felt myself writing mellower music and not music, not loud, aggressive, for lack of a better description, masculine music. And that's so I must have written 45 of these songs and just was trying to find somebody to sing on them. Actually through ESL, through some people that worked at Thievery Corporation's label, they connected me with a few singers, and Natalia Clavier and Chita Lima, who's singing on this one. And I just started emailing them songs and they were into it, and we did it all kind of via email. They would just send me their vocals and I'd add stuff. So I put that album out, and it's one of my favorite things. Actually, I just heard it the other day. I hadn't heard it in a long time, and I was like, it's like, it's pretty damn good, if I might say so myself. It's kind of cool. But so yeah, that was kind of a, something I was writing on my own that I felt like I needed to go in another direction from the bands that I was playing in at the time.
I saw you guys at South by Southwest with a Natalia Clavier this last time.
Yeah.
And even live, you pull off the sound in a very convincing way, man. That was cool.
I'm a one-trick pony, man. I can't do anything but that sound.
I was listening to this music and each of the four tracks and trying to see if there was any commonality, if they had anything in common that would reflect that they're from the same guy, from the mind in the pen of the same guy. And I think eventually, like you just said, you sort of kidded yourself about being a one-trick pony, but there is like a sonic stamp to your music where I can feel the room, I can feel it's not so clean and processed, and I can feel the room for, and I can feel the room, and there's always an energy that there's a little room for improvisation where anything can happen. I think that's mm-hmm. that's what I feel when I listen to your music.
Oh, that's cool. That's good to hear. I can't put my finger on it anymore. I kind of gave up. A long time ago. I get into the technical side of recording as well. I've actually in the last couple of years been trying to push myself to do different stuff, but I've been trying to push myself.
Who have you been working with lately?
Right now I'm working on, it was probably similar to this, but this kind of music, but I'm working on an album with a friend in London. His name is Sean Lee. We made an album called Electric Peanut Butter Company last year, and Sean's just one of my idols that I've again been lucky to become good friends with, but he's way more prolific than me. He makes me look lazy, but he holds himself up in his studio and just cranks out music, and he's got like an amazing ear. He's an amazing multi-instrumentalist. So me and him are working on something. Just started getting Natalia's demos for her new album. We just finished that Brown Sabbath album that comes out this month, and worked with another band out of Austin called Golden Dawn Orchestra, and kind of shut down my studio for a couple of months because I'm rebuilding it. So I'm working on the stuff with Sean Lee on the road right now and in my hotel room just recording whenever I get a chance.
Okay, so you said a whole bunch of things, so I want to go back just for a second. You're on the road right now with a band called Spanish Gold. Tell us who's in that.
So Spanish Gold is a collaboration between myself, a friend of mine from Laredo who I went to high school with named Dante Schwebel, Patrick Hallahan, the drummer from My Morning Jacket. This was something that Dante, a few years ago, me and him all just kind of kept in touch, and I was a fan of Hacienda, and he just called me a few years ago, said he was writing some songs and asked if I would help. Came down to Austin. He lives in Nashville now, and we just kind of worked on a few demos for him, and he was secretly plotting to start another band but not telling me. I swore to my wife, I was like, no, it's not. I'm not going to join another band. I promise. I'm just helping Dante with his songs. And she's like, oh, whatever. Sure enough, we continued the sessions in Nashville, and Pat, you know, he had already had Patrick in mind to play drums on it, and all of a sudden, next thing you know, I'm in another band. So.
You have an album coming out?
It's out right now. We're on tour right now. It just came out a couple weeks ago, and it's you know, mainly, I would say that probably the easiest way to describe it would be, you know, rock and roll, with all the influences that I have and he has and Patrick as well. And you know, I think the unifying theme again for us was that we're kind of like, one thing that we've found ourselves connecting with is that we're like kids of the MTV generation, so we all like, you know, all this old music, but we grew up on the hip hop that was coming out through, you know, MTV Raps and whatnot. And I think that's kind of what we bonded over. So we are, you know, without talking about it too much, we just kind of tried to make a rock and roll record that reflected, you know, the music we grew up on.
And you also mentioned Brownout presents Brown Sabbath.
That's right.
Okay. We're going to hear a little bit of the track Black Sabbath from that album. I'm playing air drums in the studio right now, man. I was so looking forward to this when I first heard about it. Tell me about this. Where did the idea come from?
You know, obviously, you know that we're into 70s music, and some of the guys, I mean, I think my biggest influence as a teenager was hip hop, but some of the other guys were way into metal. And, you know, I definitely had some metal in my record collection. I wouldn't say I was exactly a headbanger, but, you know, with Brownout last September, we decided to just kind of push ourselves and do this residency in Austin where we played every week, and we have a new theme every week and play a completely different set every single week. Brown Sabbath was just one that came up in the van kind of as a joke. Like everything else, we just kind of come up with something that sounds funny and just pursue it, but came up with this like just crazy ambitious, just almost kind of borderline stupid idea of learning a whole new set every single week in September and playing a whole different set. We did a hip-hop night, we did a kind of a breakdance night. One of them turned out to be Brown Sabbath. It just was something that sounded funny to us in the van. We were talking about Black Sabbath, somebody said Brown Sabbath, and we just said, oh, that would be funny. In September, we just said, and we just beat ourselves up that month learning all this stuff, but it turned out to be super awesome. And the energy around that night of Brown Sabbath, you know, actually reminded me of the energy around, like, the early Grupo Fantasma shows in Austin, where, like, there would be just lines around the block, people just freaking out, and that's... So we felt that energy when we did the Brown Sabbath night, and we just had a blast. It's so much fun, like, dissecting this music and putting our own like spin on it, and it's definitely a fun night of music.
know, you brought in some more tracks for us to play, but I kind of like the idea of just wrapping things up with this latest project.
Sounds good to me.
So I think what we'll do is we'll put some of those on our websites because we have some Sharon Jones, there's Temptations, and a killer version of Another Brick in the Wall.
Oh, yeah, that was one I was hoping we would have gotten to. Yeah, that's just to give a minute on it if anybody hears it on the website. It's a friend of mine from Monterrey, this DJ named Mexican Dubweiser, had just given me a bunch of music on a hard drive, and that he just kind of snuck that one in there. And I DJ occasionally. And when I found that, I was like, oh, my God, it's this band from Mexico doing Another Brick in the Wall. And you know, he was like, man, it's not ironic. It's not tongue-in-cheek. These dudes are not hipsters. They genuinely covered this Pink Floyd song. And every time I play it, I must have 15 people that run up and ask me what it is. It's like it brings a smile to everybody's face. Super awesome version. And, like, again, the idea of they just made it a whole other song. It's a cumbia with synth keyboards and stuff. It's super awesome, man. It brings a smile to my face every time I hear it.
All right, let's smile. Let's hear it anyway.
All right. Super awesome.
I love it. Thanks for bringing that one in, man. We'll put the other tracks on our website. Adrian, thank you so much for coming in, man. This was such a treat.
Thank you, Felix.
Hey, man. Adrian Quesada is musician, producer from Austin, Texas. He's currently traveling with Spanish Gold. We'll return to Brown Out Presents Brown Sabbath out in the West Coast pretty soon. And also thanks to the friends on Facebook who chimed in with a couple of questions and a couple of comments. You got a lot of people out there following you, man. Some of your friends from Laredo. Yeah.
All right.
Again, we want to remind you that Jasmine's on assignment. She's traveling. She'll be back with us soon. You can hear all of these songs in their entirety on our website at npr.org/altlatino. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us on Facebook. I think that's it. We'll just go out with this great Pink Floyd cover. Thanks for listening. This is Alt Latino.
Hey, vamos todos a gozar. Poniendo otro ladrillo en la pared del amor.